And we are in this chapter, the philosophy of rebirth. And we are in para number 20, if you have numbered them at all. You see, in the previous para, we have been given the central importance of the individual that is in the process of this involution. Which, as has been described in many a place, involution beginning with the Supreme Satchitananda, through the supermind, which is the consciousness which arranges the cosmic order, we have come down into the level of the inconscient. But then in the process of the reawakening or evolution, the individual plays an important place because individual has an important place because it is through the individual that this recovery or the return journey to the Supreme Consciousness is possible. Because it is in the individual that the cosmic consciousness becomes organized and capable of awakening to its own reality. So all this we discussed, looking into the real need of the individual in evolution. Of course, in the beginning, it may be an unconscious form that we see through the plant and the animal, etc. But when it comes to the human form, then this importance of the individual becomes tenfold, because he can now consciously walk on the return path to the divine. But then if Sri Aurobindo writes in the last line, if we adopt this solution, this is the first result, the reality of the persistent individual. But from that first consequence, the other result follows. The rebirth of some kind is no longer a possible machinery which may or may not be accepted. It becomes a necessity, an inevitable outcome of the root nature of our existence. Now starting with a new para. For it is no longer sufficient to suppose an illusory or temporary individual created in each form by the play of consciousness. Individuality can no longer be conceived as an accompaniment of play of consciousness in figure of body which may or may not survive the form, may or may not prolong its false continuity of self from form to form, from life to life, but which certainly need not do it. In this world, what we seem at first to see is individual replacing individual without any continuity, the form dissolving, the false or transient individuality dissolving with it, while the universal energy or some universal being alone remains forever. That might very well be the whole principle of cosmic manifestation. So once having understood the absolute necessity of the individual for evolution, then this entire argument of Buddhism or of illusionism doesn't stand ground. Because We have seen it is no more the question of the, what Sri Aurobindo says here, individuality can no longer be conceived as an accompaniment of play of consciousness in figure of body which may or may not survive the form or prolong its false continuity of self. That is the Buddhism. That in Buddhism we do not have a real individual but a false individual made up of sensations, images, you know, and the memories, etc. So there is one question of this false individual cannot keep on continuing, nor can it be what Shankara, Advaita Shankara, illusionism ended up with, that there is a continuity but it is ultimately an illusion. So Sri Aurobindo is telling us none of these theories can really stand the test of evolution, because in evolution there's got to be some permanent personality. Otherwise, evolution has no meaning. And it is not possible to have evolution without a constant personality. And now the question is, what Sri Aurobindo says, the persistent reality. But if the individual is a persistent reality, an eternal portion or power of the eternal, if its growth of consciousness is the means by which the spirit in things discloses its being, the cosmos reveals itself as a conditioned manifestation of the play of the Eternal One in the being of Satchitananda with the Eternal Many. Now this is the solution, that we need to have a persistent reality, and that persistent reality, you call it Atman, you call it psychic being. Doesn't matter. But there's got to be somebody who is moving from body to body, taking up one body, having experience, leaving it, but moving on to take another body. Because that soul wants to have another experience in another body with another personality. Well, those of you who were with me when I did the classes at Sakar, and you will see the third chapter, Rebirth and the Other Worlds, Sri Aurobindo gives in detail the internatal journey, or he would call it as the internatal interval. What happens to the soul between this internatal, or in this internatal journey, or during this internatal interval? Because the soul does not just leave the body and hang in thin air. There is a specific region or plane of consciousness to which it goes. And where it goes and why it goes, the chapter there is an extraordinary one, and we will take it up when we come to it. But just to tell you, that this question of the one persistent immortal individual, that is the Atman, must be there. Then only the whole creation has a meaning, the whole evolution has a meaning. Otherwise somebody comes for a while, stays 60, 70, 80 years and pops off, then what? All the work he has done is wasted, all the consciousness he has developed is wasted. So the whole meaning, whole the birth itself becomes meaningless. So now he is telling us that this individual is an eternal portion of the Eternal. The Eternal is the Supreme. So it comes from the Supreme as a portion, as a particle of the Supreme Brahman or Satchitananda, comes down, and then the cosmos reveals itself as a conditioned manifestation of the Eternal One. Then as the soul comes down, then the Supreme Cosmic Being also creates a world, a play, wherein this descending souls can have their own experience. Then secure behind all the changings of our personality, upholding the stream of its mutations, There must be a true person, a real spiritual individual, a true Purusha. So what Sri Aurobindo is establishing is the necessity and the reality of this true person called the true Purusha, or in simpler words, the psychic being or the Atma. He is the one extended in universality, exists in each being and affirms himself in this individuality of himself. In the individual, he discloses his total existence by oneness with all in the universality. In the individual, he discloses too his transcendence as the eternal in whom all the universal unity is founded. So you see, this is this marvelous structure of the world, that this transcendent, the Supreme Brahman or Sachidananda, comes down into the individual as the Atman. At the same time, he reveals his oneness with all the universality, because that transcendent is the individual in the human being, plus he is the universal cosmic being. So there is always this kind of this internal link. So that is why we are not separate from the world. You know, like saying, when you see a cloud, you can imagine in the cloud millions of raindrops. So we individuals are not, you see, we are not individuals like the raindrop of a cloud, remember. We are individuals directly born from the transcendent. It is not via. What I want to say is not transcendent and the cosmos, and the cosmos has become the individual. The cosmos has become the individual as regards the mind, universal life, universal emotion. But the Atman is not a product of the universal cosmos. Our Atman is a direct descent from the transcendent. So he says, in the individual he discloses to his transcendence as the eternal in whom all the universal unity is founded. This trinity of self-manifestation, you see, he calls it as the trinity of self-manifestation. This prodigious leela of the manifold identity, this magic of maya or protean miracle of the conscious truth of being of the infinite, is the luminous revelation which emerges by a slow evolution from the original in conscience. Now, this trinity of self-manifestation is the luminous revelation which emerges by a slow evolution. You see, as of now, our evolution is in ignorance, is in darkness. We do not understand this interlink between the individual, the Brahman, the universe. But Sri Aurobindo is telling us here that there is a slow process of evolution, and one day every individual will realize that he is truly the Atman, a portion of the transcendent. If there were no need of self-finding, but only an eternal enjoyment of this play of the being of Sachidananda, and such an eternal enjoyment is the nature of certain supreme states of conscious existence, then evolution and rebirth need not have come into operation. That's a very crucial sentence. I think we have got that before somewhere, in paragraph 18 itself. That is, if there were no need of self-finding but only an eternal enjoyment, what we call leela. If this world is only a leela, a play, a maya, an enjoyment, a frolicking, then this question of rebirth and evolution could not have been there. Because that's what a lot of our ancient yogas and philosophy have told us. Oh, all this is Bhagavan ka leela hai, things happen for a while and then get lost. But in a leela, what happens? When I play a game, it's a basketball game, I have an enemy or an opposite team, and then we have fun during the game. We enjoy, we lose, we are sorrowful. And then afterwards what happens? Once the game is over for 10 minutes or 15 minutes or 10 days, one day, you're sad and then you forget about it. So a game has meaning until it lasts. But there's no further evolutionary meaning. We don't remember how many times our Indian cricket team has lost a game. But the day there is that one day cricket, everybody is glued to the TV. We want to see India is winning or Pakistan or Sri Lanka. But once it's gone, it's dinner time, and maybe by the time you have your dinner, you have forgotten the game. It has no meaning, further meaning. So Sri Aurobindo, the strongest, telling us that if it is only that the Supreme Divine has made the world for the sake of a leela, then all this question of evolution, rebirth, we can forget about it. But there has been an involution of this unity into the dividing mind, a plunge into self-oblivion by which the ever-present sense of the complete oneness is lost, and the play of separative difference, phenomenal, because the real unity in difference remains unabridged behind, comes into the forefront as a dominant reality. He says, obviously, it is not a leela. Why Sri Aurobindo says it is not a leela? Because if I know the process of involution, that there has been an involution, there's no question of saying it is a leela. Because what is involved must evolve. And what was involved is the divine in matter, the Satchitananda in matter. So one day the Satchitananda or the supermind has to evolve out of matter. So the very question of involution involves the question of evolution, which involves rebirth. So there's no place for leela. So let's not take to the old philosophies that this world is a leela, is a maya, have your play and get lost. No, it is a much more meaningful thing. You see, if Sri Aurobindo had not brought in this kind of a evolutionary aspect in the universe as well as the individual, you see, evolution is there. Okay, let me put it this way. On a universal earth consciousness level, there is evolution. But on the individual level, there is rebirth. So these are the two principal, I would say, elements of Sri Aurobindo's philosophy. So never ever forget this dual thought. If you speak of evolution, it is on the global universal level, individual is rebirth. And they always go hand in hand. And this is the contribution of Sri Aurobindo's philosophy, which has made this entire life meaningful. Because if my rebirth is there, my soul has come back, for what has it come? Well, again, as I'm telling you, in the third chapter, we get the meaning of that. Why are we born? Why is there a rebirth? What is the purpose of rebirth? All that can be discussed later, but now let us establish there is a rebirth. And now there is an evolution, which means there is a purpose. And the word is purpose in the universal evolution, purpose in the individual evolution. Which means what? That life becomes yoga. Then he writes, all life is yoga. If Sri Aurobindo had not given this meaning to life and to the universal life, that sentence, all life is yoga, would have been redundant. So you see how yoga is connected to this philosophy. bereft of each other, you cannot explain. So you see, that's why that's why I always insist that whatever work you read from Sri Aurobindo, read Savitri or Synthesis, without the Light Divine, you will not appreciate other books. Because as he wrote somewhere in his letters or told somebody in his talks, the Light Divine is the metaphysical foundation of his yoga. So now you see, that first sentence in Synthesis, all life is yoga, how it is connected to his ultimate philosophy of rebirth and evolution. So coming back to the text, so you see, the play of difference has found its utmost term of the sense of division by the precipitation of the dividing mind into a form of body. No, I think I missed the previous sentence. But there has been an involution of this unity, yes, we have seen that, into the dividing mind, a plunge into the self-oblivion of the ever-present sense of the complete oneness. Now, during this involution, what happened? It was that that supreme oneness of consciousness of Satchidananda, when it came to the level of mind, it got split, it got divided, it got into the manyness. And then, but remember in the parenthesis he writes a sentence which is of great importance, let's not skip that. He says, this division is phenomenal, separative difference is only phenomenal, because the real unity in difference remains unabridged behind. So let us not think that this division is real. It is only phenomenal, that which is seen on the surface for the senses to see. But the reality is that the one has not really separated. You cannot separate the oneness of the Supreme. But it has got, you know, like we see, I think I always remember this one big image. When you go into those Rajasthani, these palaces in Rajasthan where we have the mirrored hall, there are maybe 1,000 mirrors all around you. When you go there, you see yourself 1,000 pictures. But it doesn't mean you are split into 1,000 pictures. But in 1,000 of those mirrors, you see yourself. So you see the many and the one not divided, but phenomenally is true. Phenomenally I can count 1, 2, 3, 4, 99, 200, 9,000. I can count as many. But then if I look at myself, I am not 1,000 pieces, I am single. So this is exactly the Supreme, he is all the time one. But phenomenally he looks as if he is divided. Because in each of us is a mirror. So the Divine sees in us His own mirror. He is not befooled saying, oh, I got 1,000 faces. But we, you and me, we say, oh, we are all 1,000 people and with 1,000 souls. But there are no 1,000 souls. There is only one soul and one self. So here, that's why it says, phenomenally is there, but not in reality. This play of difference has found its utmost term of the sense of division by the precipitation of the dividing mind into a form of the body in which it becomes conscious of itself as a separate ego. Well, this we have come across before too, but as he is repeating, we have to explain. You see, this divisive mind has found this absolute division in the formation of the body. Because in the formation of the body, it becomes conscious of itself as a separate ego. You see, maybe I may not be right. For example, the animal world, The animals recognize each other as separate individuals. But it's the human beings who recognize themselves as separate individuals, not because we are separate bodies, but basically we are separate egos. So in us, more than the body, the first ego says, I am separate. And then of course the body is there always, we cannot say bodies are together. But what is strong in us as individuality is not the body, more than the body is the ego. Whereas the animal, it's just the body. One animal versus another animal. So this is the difference why in mind, in the mental consciousness, the division is more. That's why it is said, in the mental consciousness, if we can develop the oneness, then even if there are so many different bodies, we could come together as a single body. For example, say in an army, so when they're fighting for a cause, the whole, the entire mind is, you know, is directed towards one cause. Then this army people, the 100 people, they become one body. There even the bodies do not separate, because the purpose of the mind is so single that all their egos, all their minds, they join together and say, we have to conquer that peak tonight. So the bodies themselves become one single body and they act as one single consciousness. So you see, ultimately the mind can change its stance, bring in that question of harmony and oneness and togetherness. Body will not be that much of a hindrance. It is an entity, but it will not be a hindrance. So he would say, a dense and solid basis has been laid for this play of division, in a world of separated forms, by an involution of the active self-conscience of Sachidananda into a phenomenal nescience. Now, to make things worse, from the level of the mind to the separative ego, we have the last thing is the separative forms of matter, which is dense and solid basis for this divisive ego. It is this foundation in nation that makes the division secure, because it imperatively opposes a return to the consciousness of unity. But still, though effectively obstructive, it is phenomenal and terminable, because within it, above it, supporting it, is the all-conscient spirit, and the apparent nescience turns out to be only a concentration, an exclusive action of consciousness tranced into self-forgetfulness by an abysmal plunge into the absorption of the formative and creative material process. In a phenomenal universe so created, the separative form becomes the foundation and the starting point of all its life action. Therefore, the individual Purusha, in working out his cosmic relations with the One, has in this physical world to base himself upon the form to assume a body. It is the body that he must make his own foundation and the starting point for his development of the life and mind and spirit in the physical existence. Now I suppose you got the trend of why Sri Aurobindo was kind of reviewing the creation of the body. He said the mind consciousness, the ego consciousness, the body consciousness, the individual body. Because the previous line where he says very beautifully that there has been a kind of a trance into self-forgetfulness by an abysmal plunge into the absorption of the formative and creative material process. Well, we have had this idea before too, that when the Supreme came down into matter, it was as if in a trance. In fact, inconscient is described as trance. A trance where the Supreme has forgotten Himself. But a trance is not that in which the consciousness is lost or suspended, is not lost. It is not non-consciousness, it is only a trance consciousness. So matter is the trance of Brahman in that state. And then there, if from that level, we see the separative form become the foundation and starting point of all its life action. So from the trance of the inconscient, there is the nescience, then there is the matter that comes in. And when matter comes in, the individuation begins. And of course we know after matter, life and mind, etc., we don't go into the detail. But what Sri Aurobindo is telling us here is that this individual Purusha, in working out his cosmic relation with the One, has in this physical world to base himself upon the form. So now Sri Aurobindo is taking us to the importance of the body, because that body gives that individuality to the individual Purusha, and that assumption of body we call birth. You see, this is the whole link. So why does the Purusha take rebirth? Now we get the full answer. Because by taking up that body, the Purusha can continue the work of evolution. Because after all, in the return journey we have seen it is the individual body which will in the future unravel the higher levels of consciousness. Because from matter came life, from life to mind, mind to supermind. Where does it come out? All from matter. All from this body. So this body which is apparently so much full of tamas and ignorance and darkness and nescience has the potential of the supermind hidden within it. So the Purusha, the individual Atman, does not take a vital form or a mental form and say, hey, I'm happy here. Our Atman could have taken a beautiful mental formation or a vital body and not be trapped in this physical body, so-called incapacitated, so-called dungeon of darkness. But with all its 99% negativeness, the body is the only chamber wherein lies the supermind. Not in the vital world, not in the mental world. So matter is hiding that, you remember that Vedas, the dark caves hiding the sun. So this body is that cave which is still hiding the sun. Neither the mental nor the vital have the sun inside, is the body. So he's telling that that assumption of body we call birth, and in it only can take place here the development of self and the play of relations between the individual and the universal and all other individuals. In it only can there be the growth by a progressive development of our conscious being towards the supreme recovery of unity with God. And with all in God, all the sum of what we call life in the physical world is a progression of the soul and proceeds by birth into the body and has that for its fulcrum, its condition of action and its condition of evolutionary persistence. A marvelous explanation. Otherwise, why does the soul take up this body which is so much full of negativeness, so much full of tamas, and something that dies, something that has no guarantee, something that has no future, that doesn't give you any kind of peace, is full of pain and sorrow and suffering. And yet soul says, no, I will take only the body. Because you see how Sri Aurobindo emphasizes, it is because in it only, you see the word, Again he would say before also, in it only can take place here the development. Second time again he says, in it only can there be the growth. So you see this extraordinary importance of the body, because body is the only place where there can be the development of the conscious being towards the supreme recovery of God, unity with God and with all in God. See this phrase, recovery of unity with God is oneness with the divine and with all in God. That means being in the body, I can be united with all other beings of the same divine upon this earth. Because we, as we said, the individual is not alone, cannot be alone. Whatever he may do or she may do, he is inalienably connected with the collective. Individual may be a guarantor, an avant-garde, a leader, but he is inseparably connected with the collective. That means the individual is connected with the universal at all times. They are two different entities, but they are so interrelated that one's progress depends on the other. So he says, we can meet with the God, with God and with all in God. All the sum of what we call life in the physical world is a progress of the soul and proceeds by birth into the body. So now for once we know why the soul chooses to come upon earth in a body. Without the body, it has no possibility of progression, no chance of manifesting the divine. So this kind of an importance given to the body, I wonder if any other philosophy in the world has given till now. Birth then is a necessity of the manifestation of the Purusha on the physical plane. You see, the every word is a necessity of the manifestation of the Purusha on the physical plane. But his birth, whether the human or any other, cannot be in this world order an isolated accident or a sudden excursion of a soul into physicality without any preparing path to it or any fulfilling hereafter. In a world of involution and evolution, not of physical form only, but of conscious being through life and mind to spirit, such an isolated assumption of life in the human body could not be the rule of the individual soul existence. It would be a quite meaningless and inconsequential arrangement, a freak for which the nature and system of things here have no place, a contrary violence which would break the rhythm of the spirit self-manifestation. So the most important idea here is that this coming of the soul into the world is not an isolated accident or a sudden excursion of a soul. So it's not by chance and perchance, as he puts it in the next paragraph, a free wanderer capriciously coming to this world. So the soul just doesn't come in as a free wanderer or out of a caprice. There is, as he says, without any preparing path to it or any fulfilling hereafter. So every birth has the past, a prepared past, and a hereafter, a future. In a world of involution, not a physical form only, but a conscious being, such an isolated assumption of life could not be the rule of the individual soul existence. So this kind of coming in without a meaning and a purpose cannot be accepted, because what we have seen is that there's an absolute involution and an evolution, which means that there is an absolute meaning to every birth of the soul. So in this kind of a well-structured manifestation, how can you ever think that the soul comes as a freelancer to the world, just to go and have a little bit of experience? It cannot be. So there's got to be this kind of a close-knit meaning. And the intrusion of such a rule of individual soul life into an evolutionary spiritual progression would make it an effect without cause and a cause without effect. So the soul came just like that. Then what is the effect without a cause? Can there be an effect without a cause? Or can there be a cause without an effect? So they're all interlinked. So the very fact the soul comes, there's a cause. The very fact the soul comes into the body, there's a hereafter. So the cause and the effect are always interlinked. It would be a fragmentary present without a past or a future. The life of the individual must have the same rhythm of significance, the same law of progression as the cosmic life. Its place in that rhythm cannot be a stray, purposeless intervention. It must be an abiding instrumentation of the cosmic purpose. Neither in such an order can we explain an isolated advent, a one birth of the soul in the human body, which would be its first and last experience of the kind, by a previous existence in other worlds, with a future before it in yet other fields of experience. So of course he's saying, you have understood well here, the life of the individual must have the same rhythm of significance as the cosmic life. You see, what he's counter-arguing is that philosophy of any religion which says the soul comes only once into a body and then it doesn't repeat. So Sri Aurobindo is telling us, what purpose has such a birth? Once it comes and then it doesn't ever repeat. So he would say this does not follow the rhythm of the cosmos itself. Because in the cosmos, in this cosmic rhythm, there's always a returning. Night and day, year after year, the sun, the movement of sun, there is a repetition. There is a reordering of the old and it comes back. So in this cosmic cycle, the soul also has to be part of it by taking birth and rebirth, birth and rebirth. So this birth, rebirth, as it is called, a wheel, it really suits the cosmic wheel. It cannot be independent of the cosmic wheel. It's part and parcel of this cosmic rhythm. So he would say, it must be an abiding instrumentation of the cosmic purpose. Well, maybe we'll have to suspend at this time, at this point, because as you can see, every line needs an expansion of thought. So, we will suspend it here, we'll continue from this para 22 in our class tomorrow.